Bruce Pratt here with us for this week's edition of Sports Lit 101.
Yeah, this week we're going to talk about the last essay we're going to talk about from the book Overcoming the Neutral Zone Trap, Hockey's Agents of Change. This is a remarkable story, and I'm really glad I stumbled upon this because it's not a topic, or I should say a nuance in a topic I ever would have thought about. But the question comes up is, who is disabled enough to be a disabled athlete? And I thought back to when I worked at Sugarloaf years ago in the competition center. There was a guy who used to make his earn his season pass by volunteering at races and the like. And he had a handicap sticker on his truck because he had broken his back at one point. And he could ski. He could ski fairly well, but it was difficult for him to walk. It was easier, actually, for him to ski in some ways. And he walked in a way that you knew something had hurt him, or he had hurt himself. And people would always say, he'd say, look, I'll run out to my truck and get that. And people say, if you can run out to your truck, how can you be handicapped, right? It was sort of the thing. And people gave him a lot of grief, but a lot of it was good natured, those of us who work with him. But, you know, this is a story of Kieran Block. Now, Kieran Block's brother, he's from Edmonton. His brother was playing in the WHL when he was younger. Now, the WHL is one of the three major junior hockey leagues in Canada. Most NHL players in North America either come from an NCAA team or from either the Western Hockey League, Ontario Hockey League, or Quebec Major Junior. So this is the highest level of hockey prior to turning full-time pro. He went on to play in the same league, and then he made a big mistake. He jumped off a cliff thinking he was about to go into the water, and he didn't, and he destroyed his legs. And he faced what has turned out to be years of rehabilitation. When he got hurt and he knew that his WHL career was over, he enrolled at the University of Alberta, and he earned a spot on he got an education degree. He learned a spot on their hockey team because he could skate a little bit, but he couldn't skate very well. And so what happened was someone suggested to him that there might be other opportunities. Well, he got sick, and they had to put during the fusing of his leg and other things, got sick, and he had to have all these operations. And suddenly he was bedridden for months, and he couldn't even walk. So he decided that he would see what could happen. His ankle was starting to fuse. They finally had to fuse it in 2013, 6 years after the accident, because it was just unbearable pain. So he got introduced to sledge hockey by a friend of his who'd lost a leg to cancer. And he ends up playing on a world championship sledge hockey team.
What is sledge hockey?
Now, sledge hockey is something you see occasionally at the Alphon between games. It's for para players. You have a stick in each hand. You're locked into a sled, a small sled that you sit upright in. And you propel yourself using the back of these short sticks, which have a claw on them. And it's a tiny hockey stick, and it looks almost like the kind you'd get as a souvenir at a hockey rink. Hmm. And it's an international Paralympic game. Sledge hockey is a big deal. You might remember when Roxanne Saucier, who used to write for the Bangor Daily News, her husband Galen was injured in an accident, and he plays sledge hockey now. Now, sledge hockey is anybody. You could be an amputee. You could be a paraplegic. You could have other injuries, but it's supposed to be for people who cannot use their legs in a normal way. All right. Now, in Kieran Block's case, he was not determined to be eligible to be a sledge hockey player until his ankle was surgically fused. That began a healing process that has allowed him to now be an upright hockey player again. Hmm. So he said, and I found this, I'm going to read it. I don't normally do this, but I'm going to read exactly what he said. I was an elite hockey player, and there was no way I was going to play a disabled sport, or so I thought. Fast forward a few years, and I am now a multiple medal-holding Paralympic athlete who learned to love sledge hockey. For me, the sport serves as a way to stay in shape and still be able to maintain some sort of normalcy by competing in a sport with a similar set of rules and methods. And he talks about how the guy that he was then told the best thing he could do if he wanted to stay in sledge hockey was not heal physically.
Hmm.
If I wanted to qualify as a disabled athlete, disabled enough for the national team. So he got to feeling better and things started to get better and the doctors categorized him as too able-bodied. Now, the guy couldn't walk and skate at the time, but he was too able-bodied to be a disabled player. Ironically, I required an ankle fusion in order to be considered disabled enough for sledge hockey. My ankle had begun to fuse itself prior to surgery, but until my ankle was fully fused, I was not disabled enough to qualify for the team. You read that correctly. My pain and difficulty walking did not constitute a disability, while my fused ankle, which alleviated my pain and even assisted me enough to return to upright hockey, would allow me to be classify as disabled and to qualify for the national team. Now, he has gone on to coach sledge hockey, and he again is playing upright hockey, but he's become a real advocate for let's try and figure this kind of thing out. And, I got to thinking about it, and I was remembering another time at Sugarloaf when we had the U.S. Nationals, and Peekaboo Street had drawn a very early number to run in the downhill. And prior to that event, a number of Paralympic athletes ran, including the very talented Paralympic athlete Sarah Billmeyer from Maine, who's an amputee skier who was really good. So she's coming down the mountain, and I'm working at a crossing to guard people from getting out and on the course. And some people would gather behind us and look up the hill, and this woman goes, "Oh, that's not Peekaboo Street." And Sarah Billmeyer's dad was there, and he said, "No, that's my daughter Sarah. She's very good too." And I only met him briefly. Very, very nice family. But I was thinking about how, there are people who can do things despite a physical disability better than someone else with the same disability. The same way that's true for able-bodied people. Sure. I mean, people I know who have been Paralympians or have been injured in some way like that refer to the rest of us as the TABs, the temporarily able-bodied, that eventually will all break down. Now, Kieran wrote a book called The Ups and Downs of Almost Dying, and I'm efforting, they say, to get a copy of it. It's not available easily here in the States, but either Angie Abdu or some friend of mine from Canada will get me a copy. Randy Maggs, somebody got us a copy. And I like to read it, and I'm going to reach out to Kieran to talk to him about this, because I think this is something that is going to become a bigger issue in the world. I think more people who have suffered injuries are going to want to be involved in these kinds of things. And I think we need to find a way. Do we have the inclusive Hall of Fame, or do we have the exclusive Hall of Fame?
Right.
And I think it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. I mean, I had a friend, Andy Parr, who was a Paralympic skier because he was losing his sight. He worked with us when he probably shouldn't have been. I took his snowmobile test for him, and we never let him on the snowmobile because everybody was supposed to be certified. Yeah, I'm Andy Parr today. What a great guy. And he went on to become totally blind and become a competitive racer behind a seeing skier. So I have a deep affection for this and for Special Olympics and the like, so I'm really looking forward to getting into this more, and I'm glad to have my eyes opened.
Excellent. Now, what's coming up in the weeks ahead on Sports Lit?
Well, next week we're going to look at a book called Maine's Greatest Athletes, and the only reason that I thought we would look at this is because there will be somebody who will call. I will read all of those 50 names. Someone will call in very shortly after we've done that with, "What about..." Yeah, and it's great because there are a lot of whatabouts, and there are people included in here who are not actually athletes, which the author made a distinction. But it's from Down East Books, and on the front cover, Seth Westcott and Joan Benoit Samuelson, I'd say no doubt they both belong there.
Oh, yeah.
Maine's major gold medal winners. And I was glad to see also that Fly Rod Crosby, first woman Maine guide, who was a great person in the history of fishing, is in there too, and a candlepin bowler.
Ooh, which one?
It's a woman.
Put you on the spot here.
No. I can find it quickly. It's a woman, and
it's not you, Carrie.
I was going to say I did grow up in Lincoln where there was a candle pin alley.
I've done candle and duck pin. Charles Milan the Third.
Oh, Charlie Milan. Yeah.
Charlie Milan, rather.
Yeah.
The Third, Maine's winningest candlepin bowler.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, we'll hear all about that next week on Sports Lit 101.